Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Erica Sandberg, your host of the new financial lifestyle program, Adventures with Money. I am thrilled to be your guide. Get ready to cast negativity aside because I will be covering what you most want to know about money, which is how to get it, how to save it, and then how to use it so that you can have the most wonderful life imaginable. So, in this exciting interview show, each week I am going to speak with a fascinating new guest. Some will be consumer finance experts who are going to get you on track with your dreams. Others are going to talk travel, fashion, politics, social issues, and even sports, all from a fresh financial angle. And then still others are going to inspire you to be a crucial part of this world so that you can give back in the most powerful way possible. Now, what I'm not going to do, I will not be droning on about investments or insurance. I will never, and I mean ever, tell you to stop buying that cup of coffee from the cafe that you love or from splurging on a plane ticket to Thailand or wherever, because Adventures with Money is about excitement, and you will soon see that no matter how much you earn, own, or even owe, you can live passionately. So are you ready? Welcome to my first show. Okay, right. Okay, right now I'd like to introduce my very first guest, Elizabeth Donati from Creative Wealth International. Elizabeth was born and raised on a farm in Bend, Oregon. She learned how to do just about everything there except what to do with money. Little did she know that once she did teach herself, she would have a whole new career teaching other people about money and investing, which is kind of the way it happens. It's kismet. Elizabeth is now the president and CEO of the company Creative Wealth International. She is creator of the innovative financial education programs such as The Money Game, Camp Millionaire, Moving Out for Teens, and Celebrating Women and Wealth. It's pretty impressive. Her Women's Financial Empowerment program is Women and Wealth, and this is basically what we're going to be talking about today. She is an expert at teaching financial principles in a way that's entertaining, engaging, empowering, and most of all, fun. Elizabeth won the 2010 Financial Educator of the Year Award from National Financial Educators Council. Very impressive. She trains people all over the globe to empower kids and teens to be responsible for themselves and the world. You know, it's just a small little goal. She is the author of three books, The Ultimate Allowance, Your Money Jars, and Rocks to Riches, and her first kids' financial adventure, a genre that she hopes is going to catch on as financial education becomes as commonplace as reading, writing, and arithmetic, at least we can certainly hope. When she is not teaching, writing, or developing new programs, you can find Elizabeth in Santa Barbara, California, gardening, painting, making ceramics, doing yoga, swimming, and a whole host of other things that she enjoys. So on that note, welcome to my very first episode of Adventures with Money, Elizabeth.
Erica, thank you so much. I listened to you and went, well, that's why I'm tired sometimes. Wow.
Exactly. You're exhausted. You've got some really big projects going on and have for a long time. So I'm going to jump right in and ask you some key questions because this is what everybody wants to know. And the first one is, if you could elaborate a little bit more about your background and your programs for both kids and money. And everybody does something for a reason. What's yours? What really, really motivated you?
Oh, wow. It's like in the first paragraph of my bio. You know, I grew up on a farm, and my mom and my dad, but primarily my mom, taught us how to do everything from raising and butchering chickens to how to raise everything in the garden and cook and can and mow lawns and fix tractors and everything. And, you know, I at least all these years of being an adult, I don't have a sad story. You know, I've never been starving. I've never not had a roof over my head. I've never not had clothes. And, you know, so I don't have a sad story of, you know, rags to riches type of a deal. However, I remember in my second marriage, I've had two, and now I'm happily partnered with the third one on the farm again. And again, I ended up on a farm again because I really wanted to get back to that lifestyle. I love it. But I remember when my second ex and I had gotten out of a lot of debt that we'd gotten into, trying to start a business. We weren't spending it on cruises and things. It was really all business debt. And 1 month we still had a $3,500 month payment, and the next month, of course, it was all paid off. And we looked at each other and said, "Well, what do we do with this chunk of money?" And I remember saying to him, I'm 57 now, and that was, you know, 12 years ago, so 15. And I remember saying to him, well, you're the guy. You don't know what to do with the money? He says, no, you don't know what to do with the money? And I said, no, I don't. And I remember calling my mom at that point, and I said, how come I know how to do everything but deal with this money stuff that I keep making? And she was very silent and finally almost shameful, which is unlike my mother completely, because she's very, very powerful. And she said, well, honey, I just couldn't teach you something I didn't know.
Oh.
Yeah. And what really kicked me into gear was a letter to the editor in our local Santa Barbara News Press paper, where a business attorney had basically written a letter to the editor chastising the population here, saying, look, if you had been doing with your money what you should have been doing with your money since you started making money, you could buy a house here, right? Because housing has always been super expensive in this area. And, but it was his last little ending dig. He said, and when, as a nation, are we going to start teaching our kids about money? And it was like a light bulb went off, a lightning flash, and I remember standing up because I was working with my ex-husband. I was standing with a bunch of people. I stood up and was working with a bunch of people, and I said, why doesn't somebody just do a money camp for kids and we can teach them everything nobody's learning, at least during the summer? And so you know what happens when you say that to the universe. It says, fine, you do it. So I did. I was compelled. I was driven. I couldn't not do it. I still can't not do it. You know, my son keeps saying, Mom, how many last camps are you going to do? I said, probably 30 more. I can't not do it. I just have to. And the thing with the women, oh, my God, I'm compelled on steroids. So,
well,
I have to do it.
I mean, for example, women aren't that much different than men. I mean, we have the same, or do, are we? We have the same experience. We go to school. We get a job. We earn. Then what? Why do women have, and is it true? Why do women have such a difficult time understanding money in a way that helps them be financially successful? And before I allow you to answer that, I've got to tell you, what really comes to mind here is that more often than not, I have heard women, not men, but women say, I have a really hard time valuing myself, literally putting a value to my work. And tell me, is that the crux of it? Is this something that we're just uncomfortable with? What's going on?
It's part of it. It's a huge story, as you might imagine. I won't even be able to cover the story in like a week's worth of workshops. But that is part of it. And it's not that they don't value their work. It's not that they don't value themselves. So that's not that. I want to take that off the table. Because a lot of people say, oh, women don't value themselves. It's like, no. We do value what we do. But and I'm going to introduce you to a word that I coined years ago. It's genderalization. Okay, so I have lots of genderalizations. I have.
Oh, I like it.
You can use it. It's cute. Anyway, obviously generalizations about gender. What I find, however, is I'm going to take one step back and look at men's primary role and what they use money for is to provide and protect the ones he loves, okay? And remember, genderalization. So women, on the other hand, women's primary role seems to be in the world, and remember, this is hardwired from caveman, came woman time, and we're not that far removed from those times. Even though you think we are not in a time frame wise. So women, however, are what I call we're taker carers, right? We like to take care of. So in the past, the men made the money, brought it home. The women used the money to buy the food, to clothe the kids, to make the house nice, to provide for everybody, right? She took care of, he provided and protected.
Mm.
So now, fast forward to what we're doing today, we still just want to take care of. I know women who spend money they shouldn't spend, that they don't have, that should be spent on them with putting it away, but they can't, they're compelled to do good. You know, for women, donating isn't just an act, it's like a vocation, right? There are stories where women have not fed their families because they were so compelled to do good by and help with the neighbors. Like they just, you know, spread all the money out and fed everybody. So when it gets to that valuation thing, it's not that she doesn't value herself. She just doesn't have any clue why it has anything to do with money.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
I do. And I think that's very interesting. And I certainly don't want to imply that women don't value their time and their energy and what they do for work. I am a woman. I do.
Uh-huh.
I found just more often than not, it's assigning a financial value to it, as in, hey, you know, what's my salary? What should my salary be? What should I get paid for this project? I've found that to be true, and it breaks my heart. What do you think about that?
I agree. It does break my heart, too. And it gets back to that, you know, when you look at the gender gap, whether, you know, there's all different kinds of statistics, and I don't buy statistics other than allow that to show a trend, right? So if let's say that the gender gap is still somewhere between 20 and 25%, meaning men make typically 20, 25% more in the same job. Well, part of that is just that the man asks for more.
Exactly.
You know, right. So we can't blame the men.
Right.
We can't blame the corporations. We can't point a finger at anybody but ourselves. You know, that little saying, with like when you point a finger at somebody, you've got one pointed at somebody and you've got, you know, three pointed back at you. You have to take some responsibility. So all those statistics about, well, you know, women still da-da-da. Yeah, but it's our own damn fault, you know?
Exactly. I honestly really couldn't agree more, and I've got a funny story to share about that. When my sister was working as a paralegal, her partner, her then husband, actually, was also a paralegal. She was kind of sequestered into this, like, kind of horrible little cubicle and got very basic, almost nothing. Whereas he, when he went into the position, said, I want the corner office, I want a cell phone, and I want it to be paid for. I want to have a car just in case if I need to work late. I want a car service so I can get home. He asked. Guess
mm-hmm.
what? He got.
Got it.
So that story never, ever left me. And I think about him to this day as, you know, he asked. So it's time for us to start asking. True?
True. And understanding that the reason, the primary undercurrent of why we do it really stems from back to that cave girl, cave guy thing, because we were subservient. And it's not that we were subservient because we wanted to be. We had to be. We weren't the stronger sex, right? We weren't the ones that were going to go out and actually kill the buffalo or whatever it is. You know, and it's also the same reason why men are single focused and women have what Alison Armstrong refers to as, I think it's diffused awareness. You know, she says you walk in a living room and the pillows speak to you. I'm out of place. Move me, right? And so there's a reason for all of the ways that we are. And if you can, I find when I coach, I do quite a bit of coaching with women because I love it and I'm really good at it. I'm probably good at it because I love it, and both, you know, vice versa. But when I work with women and try to really show them that the reason that they are the way they are in a lot of times is because of hardwired, natural, instinctive ways of being. So if we're used to and dependent upon, you know, we're used to being dependent upon the man because he's stronger, because they provide, so that we can take care of the kids, so that we can keep them safe and all of this, then it totally makes sense that we relinquish our I hesitate using the word power, but mm-hmm. I'm going to use it, but not meaning power over, just to be empowered, meaning our internal power to stand up and be the person that we want to be if we choose to want to, you know, actually make that happen. You know, so a lot of it is the simple fact that we're hardwired to be the weaker sex, to succumb, to do what we're, you know, to be liked, to be loved, to do what we should do in order to be provided and protected for. So there you go. It's that, you know. And women, when you look at money, when you ask a woman, well, what is money good for? Most of them will say security. Freedom second, security first.
Yeah, and then there's like outliers like me. I it's for fun.
Yeah,
it's for having a good time. I definitely don't want to sacrifice that. So obviously, your contention is that women do think differently about money than men. Are there any advantages? Anything that kind of comes to mind? Say, well, hey, you know what? It's not all bad.
Yes, actually, there are. They say these things, I would say. all the studies that I have read and the research shows that once women do learn about money and investing and develop the right habits, because you and I both know it's all about habits, and the habits are all controlled by thoughts and beliefs and our attitudes about money and our priorities and all of it. This is such a big story, right? It's like 14,000 books all rolled into one. But once women get the information and they log it in their cells and they start practicing what they should be doing, paying themselves first, investing, you know, building some passive income streams, those sorts of things. And yes, it's hard and confusing and overwhelming, but you got to do it if you want to stop complaining. But I found that all the research shows that once they actually do that, they're actually better investors.
Mm.
And they're better investors for several reasons. The primary one is they're not ego-driven. And so they're doing it just for self-preservation. You know, they go, wow. I have a female friend who is about 10 years older than me. She just retired. And she's my hero. Oh, my God. She's an engineer. She put herself to I'm 57, so she's 67. She put herself through college because her dad said, well, girls don't go to college, right? She got married two or three times. The last time ended up in $40,000 worth of debt because her ex-husband, the third ex-husband, you know, put them in debt, and he flaked, and she felt like she needed to do it. So she went back. She became an engineer, and she just retired 3 weeks ago. And because she and I are really open with each other, and one of my big things is, you know, if you're going to get better with money, the first thing you got to do is stop making it mean anything about you other than you don't know something, and start talking about it, right? And you mm-hmm. learn by talking about it, and it's a conversation. And I said, so tell me how much you saved and what you put it in, because I want to hear what you did. She laid it right on the table because that's who she and I are. I am so impressed with what she did. She scrimped and saved and did the right thing and got into this investment, and she knew what insurance to do. And she said, it was hard. I had to get the right people. I had to learn. She said, but I did not want to put myself in a situation where I was dependent on another man. I want to live a good life. I want to retire. I want to travel. She's a wine drinker. She loves her wine, so she wants to go places where there's wine. And I am so proud of her. I looked at her and I said, you're my hero.
Absolutely.
But put her into tears. And I said, no, you have to understand, you are my hero. And I get tears just thinking about it. But she's done such a beautiful job for herself, and it wasn't easy.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's hard to learn new things. It's hard to take a risk. It's hard to scrimp. It's the tasks that are involved are not always, you know, pleasant. So, yes, when people actually do it, whether they're men or women, they are heroic. It's this beautiful experience. So tell me more about celebrating women and wealth. What's this all about? I know about it to some degree, but I really want everybody to know about it.
I know. Well, my foray into working with women started in 2008, and I did I barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning, so I don't remember whether I did two seminars or three. And I did women's programs a couple of years, and they were wonderful. The women loved them. I loved them. I still run into women today that say, oh, my God, my life is different because I took your seminar, you know. And I had to quit doing the women's programs because there were two of me. There was me, and then there was the gal that worked for me. And she and I just looked at each other after the second or the third one, and I said, I know we're both exhausted. We can't do the kids programs and the adult programs. I said, I get it. I get it. This is a painful situation. We sat there in my living room because I've always worked out of my home in offices. And we sat in front of the fire and we looked at each other. And in tears, we realized we had to go back to the kids because that was my, you know, that was the backbone of what I did.
Right.
And I'm glad I did. I really am glad I did. I know more now. I'm a much more powerful teacher and speaker, and I know more internet marketing now, so that's really helpful. The platforms are better. You know, you can do so much now in terms of online education, which I'm going to build. I'm building a huge learning platform for women that doesn't exist anywhere, and I'm so excited about it.
Oh, so that's intriguing.
It doesn't exist, I promise you. What I'm building doesn't exist. And,
okay.
I'm going to make it free. But anyway, so going back to, I've really handed the kids programs over to the nonprofit arm, and somebody else is going to run them, even though I'm still going to teach them because I have to. I love them. The kids drive me nuts. And at the same time, I love them. I love playing with them. But I had to go back to the women. And so 9 months, I had already had the logo developed and the name developed 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, it just has been sitting there, just staring at me going, come on, just do it when you're ready. And finally I woke up one day and I went, I'm ready. I got to go back to this. And I'm so excited. We're going to have, I think, 45 or 50 women this weekend, next weekend, and several are, lots of them are coming on scholarship, which is my intention was always for money never to be an object. You know, I don't want money to be the objection for learning about money. And I don't want women to have to put them on, you know, on credit cards. It's like, well, you can make it $300 or $400. I'm like, no, I don't want them to put $400 in the credit card, even for education. Let me see if I could figure out a different way. So I'm building a different model. I want to make it so that the women that can't afford will support the women that can't afford. I want us to be a community because, you know, as well as I do, a well-informed, educated woman is a better mother, she's a better wife, she's a better partner, she's a better employee, she's a happier human being, and she will help make better communities. And you said, why women? Because we're the crux of the matter. We hold it all in our hands, and men are important. I love men. I've got a fabulous one. I love all the ones I meet. When women say men are schmucks, I'm like, not the men I've ever met. They're wonderful. So I love the male sex. However, I understand and can see that by educating and empowering women in their financial world, it bleeds and feathers and spreads and ripples into every aspect of their lives and our communities and families. And heck, you know, stronger. Imagine if we had stronger families. I mean, the kids these days, they're a mess. And it's because nobody's raising them. You know, we're paying people to raise them.
Yeah.
So it's a huge story. It's a huge story. It's a huge issue. But there are answers. And my second husband said to me very poignant words one time, because I was married to him when I started the kids program. And he said, honey, he said, please remember, you don't have to change the world. You have to influence. You change the world by influencing those people around you, by setting an example, by doing what you can, and then letting it ripple itself out away from you. And so those were really wise words to me. And it's like, I've got a licensee in India with a kids program. She has been my licensee for less than a year and already has the program in several places in India.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, my little thing, it just brings me to tears, you know.
Wow.
Yes, it's a business, but it's so much more than a business to me. It's just something that has to be done, and I'm so happy to be the one that was chosen to do it, you know.
Okay. Well, speaking of chosen, I choose you now to give the 6 M's of money that you've developed.
Oh, fine.
We're running out of time, so we're going to do it fast. What can people walk away with?
Really fast. I mean, there are more than this, but minding is the first M. You've got to know how to think about money. And first, you've got to have the right belief system. So that's the first one. Managing money is the second one. All of the money that comes into your life, if you don't learn how to manage it, it's going to go bye-bye. know, we always, one of our principles is it's better to tell your money where to go than to ask it where it went. Okay, so that's managing. The third one is multiplying. And multiplying, as you know, is putting your money to work for you. It's investing. It's making sure that you take a dollar and you turn it into 10 or more. The fourth M is making money. Now, most people think that earning money and making money is completely the same thing. I contend it's not. I teach that it's not. Earning money is when you work for an hour and you get paid for that hour and you never get paid for it again. Making money, however, is when you work for an hour or more. So you put your time and energy, right, into something and probably some money, but you get paid over and over and over and over again, like the online platform, like my money game. It took me tons of time and money to build it, but you know what? I now sell it all over the world all month long, right? So that's making money. The fifth one I call mending, and people say, well, why mending? I said, mending is donating. You know, women like to fix things, right? We like to fix things and take care of things, and that reminded me of my mother mending the socks. Okay, I know how to mend a sock. Have I lately? No, I buy new socks, but I do know how to mend. The last one is mentoring. I've been to programs where you had to sign an NDA in order to go to the program saying that you would not share the information, and I say, bull. My program requires the women to sign an agreement, and they sign it before they get in. They walk into the seminar, and they have to agree to share it. I don't care how you do it. I don't care whether you take one young woman underneath your wing, or you put together a key or a little thing on your own and ask me to show up. Whatever, you have to share the information. And I tell them, you don't have to be an expert. You just have to be two or three steps ahead of where they are, right? So those are the six M's, and that's the program I'm actually building online too, the extensive one. And it will be free for women that need it to be free, because money will never be an objection someone can give me for not learning, ever.
Okay, Elizabeth, amazing. Where can people still sign up? Can they? And how can they get more information about you and the program?
Yeah, the best way to go is just to go to Celebrating Women and Wealth, and it obviously is an A-N-D, so celebratingwomenandwealth.com. There are two links right on the homepage. You can't miss them that say March Workshop. When that's over, it'll probably say November Workshop. and it'll click through to the event workshop page, and then they can read all about it. There's my phone numbers all over the place, so I make myself incredibly available, and people can sign up until that morning and come show up in Santa Barbara. It's got a beautiful place called the Fess Parker Resort right on the ocean. It's just going to be, I'm so excited. And I've got Esther, who travels the world and teaching. She's an actress / transformational speaker. Her name is Margene Holden. You can look her up, and she's amazing. So we're actually going to teach it together. And it's a dream I've had since I met her in my training days in 2005 to have her teach with me. And it's all coming to fruition. And it brings me to tears, and I'm so happy about it.
Well, I'm happy you're happy. It's time to make more people happy. This is it. I am so happy that we actually did get a chance to speak and that you were my first guest. And thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Oh, my gosh. The pleasure has been all mine. Thank you so much. I can't tell you how honored I feel. So thank you.
Fantastic. Bye, Elizabeth.
Bye, Erica.
Okay, well done. Thanks for joining me. And don't forget to make learning about consumer finance a serious adventure. Bye.